Welcome to the Citizen Media Law Podcast, providing practical knowledge and tools for citizen journalists. I'm Colin Rinesmith, digital media producer at the Citizen Media Law Project. This week, David Ardia previews our legal threats database. I'll talk about a recent decision on First Amendment protection for anonymous bloggers. And Sam Bayard spotlights a defamation suit involving an Iranian blogger in Canada.
On November 7th, the Citizen Media Law Project will unveil its new legal threats database, a catalog of the growing number of lawsuits, cease and desist letters, and other legal challenges individuals face online. This publicly accessible database, already containing hundreds of entries, will provide lawyers, mainstream media, and citizen journalists alike with a valuable resource for assessing the validity and possible outcomes of legal threats to online speech. As individuals engage in speech online, whether by writing blogs, posting photos and videos, or republishing the work of others, they are finding themselves in legal disputes with individuals, corporations, and governments. Unlike established media organizations that have the resources to pursue important reporting in the face of legal challenges, non-traditional journalism sites are particularly vulnerable to legal threats and coercion. Without legal assistance, it is easy to imagine how one threatening letter could close an important avenue of reporting, or one lawsuit could shut down a promising new journalism site. The new legal threats database will help individuals and organizations understand how to defend their rights online. The first-of-its-kind database contains legal threats from 33 states and 9 countries and is growing daily. These threats range from defamation lawsuits filed against bloggers to cease and desist letters claiming copyright infringement sent to MySpace users. We hope you will come and check out the new database. Visitors will be able to input new threat entries, comment on existing threats, and search the database in a multitude of ways, including by location, legal claims, publication medium, and content type. You will find links to the database right off our homepage.
On October 23rd, Justice Marcy Friedman of the New York Supreme Court dismissed a lawsuit that sought discovery from Google regarding the identities of the operator of a Blogger.com blog entitled Orthomom and one of its anonymous commenters. The court's opinion is potentially important because it addresses the difficult question of what standard a court should apply when deciding whether to unmask an anonymous defendant in an online defamation action. First, some background. The blog Orthomom, which is operated anonymously, deals with matters of local interest in, quote, the Five Towns community on Long Island and the larger community of Orthodox Jewry. Comments critical of Pamela Greenbaum, a Lawrence, Long Island school board member, appeared on the blog in January 2007. Greenbaum objected to both the primary blog content and a user comment. In February 2007, Greenbaum filed a motion in New York State Court that sought to compel Google to disclose identifying information about Orthomom and the commenter. At the time, Greenbaum and Google entered into a stipulation in which Google agreed to produce the requested information in April unless a third party objected to the court before that time. The stipulation also required Google to notify Orthomom's anonymous operator about the pending disclosure of her identity. Before the April deadline, a lawyer representing Orthomom contacted the court and objected to disclosure. The court later granted Orthomom's motion to intervene in the action. Last Tuesday, the court finally ruled on Greenbaum's discovery request. It denied the request and dismissed the lawsuit. In its decision, the court recognized that the First Amendment protects the right of an anonymous poster to engage in speech on the internet. But this right is not absolute, the court said, and it is necessary to balance the right against a plaintiff's interest in pursuing a valid cause of action for defamation. Significantly, the court expressed an inclination to follow the standard set forth in Dendrite v. Doe, in which a New Jersey appellate court held that a plaintiff must produce sufficient evidence for each element of its claim before a court will order discovery of the identity of an anonymous defendant. In Orthomom's case, however, the court indicated that it was not necessary to decide the precise standard. This was because, quote, the statements on which Greenbaum seeks to base her defamation claim are plainly inactionable as a matter of law. Specifically, the court held that statements by Orthomom criticizing Greenbaum's views were not susceptible of a defamatory meaning and constituted protected opinion. The court held further that the statement of the anonymous commenter that Greenbaum was a, quote, bigot and really should not be on the board, unquote, was protected opinion. It is encouraging to see another court leaning in the direction of Dendrite v. Doe and Doe v. Cahill, the two decisions most protective of anonymous speech in the context of a defamation suit. But it's too bad that Justice Friedman's discussion on this point is dicta, that is, it's not necessary to the decision. So, the Orthomom decision may be of little use to future anonymous defendants, arguing that a summary judgment-like standard should apply. At the very least, however, the decision stands for the proposition that a court cannot simply rubber stamp a plaintiff's request for discovery, nor rely merely on a plaintiff's subjective good faith about the viability of her claim. In any event, this is a great result for Orthomom. Congratulations.
Hossein Darakhshan, an Iranian-born blogger based in Toronto, reported Tuesday that he had been sued for defamation in a Canadian court. Darakhshan is a prominent figure in the history of the Iranian blogosphere. In 2001, he developed a technological solution that enabled Iranian bloggers to blog in Persian. He also published a widely used set of instructions on how to create a blog in Persian using blogger.com's free service. The lawsuit is just the latest chapter in a dispute that began this summer. In late July, counsel for Mohammad Mehdi Khalaji, a fellow at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy, sent a letter to Darakhshan, his domain registrar, GoDaddy, and his hosting service, Hosting Matters, Inc. The letter complained of defamatory statements allegedly made in a number of Darakhshan's Persian language posts in 2005. According to the letter, these posts claimed, among other things, that Khalaji was working for a right-wing think tank that openly supported the policy of regime change in Iran, and apparently was, quote, giving ideas to the cruelest and dirtiest enemies of Iran and humanity. Darakhshan disputes the accuracy of Khalaji's translation of his statements. Khalaji's letter indicated that GoDaddy and Hosting Matters, both U.S. companies, were implicated in the activities conducted on Darakhshan's blogs, and that Khalaji's claim extended to them as publishers. It demanded that the recipients take down the offending posts, publish a letter of, quote, contrition, apology, and retraction, unquote, and pay Khalaji $10,000. After a lengthy back and forth between Darakhshan and Hosting Matters, the hosting service terminated Darakhshan's accounts, and he moved his blogs to another service. The blogs went back up after a few days, apparently with the disputed posts still in place. Khalaji sued Darakhshan in the Superior Court of Justice in Ontario on October 19th. It doesn't look like Khalaji pursued further action against Hosting Matters or GoDaddy. This is somewhat surprising, given that Darakhshan probably doesn't have the $2 million requested as damages in the lawsuit. And Canadian law doesn't have an analog of CDA 230, which insulates service providers in the United States from liability for the statements of, quote, another information content provider. But it's a truism by now that lawsuits of this kind are motivated more by a desire for personal vindication than for money. This is a fascinating and difficult case because the statements fall into a gray area between spirited political argument and personal attack. It seems to me that most of the complained of statements are either opinion or hyperbole. A reasonable reader would likely understand them to be so. But courts, at least those in the United States, examine statements of opinion to determine if they are based on or presume underlying facts. If they do, they can still be actionable. We'd love insight from our readers and listeners on how Canadian libel law might change the analysis.
You've been listening to the Citizen Media Law Podcast, a production of the Citizen Media Law Project at Harvard Law School's Berkman Center for Internet and Society. To learn more about the stories heard in this podcast, visit our blog at citmedialaw.org.